can have different ties, but like an emotional tie, a soul tie, and a healthy one could be where it can be between the same sex, it can be between opposite sex, it can be between family members, and basically it's just a heavy dependence on someone else in an unhealthy way is the best way I can explain it. But the symptoms that you will come across is you'll have this extreme need of approval and recognition. You'll have a great desire to control the other person. You'll have problems with intimacy and boundaries. You don't know where your boundaries are because you think that because you're in control, your boundaries are your boundaries, not theirs. You begin to lie, a lot of dishonesty. You'll do anything. People pleasing is another one. Just all kinds of things. And then you have, you can even in the unhealthy form, you can go into violence. You know, you can go as an extreme if you're in an abusive relationship. And so, you know, those are kind of symptoms that to start with. And you'll know because they'll begin to pull you away from your relationship with Christ as well.
Thank you for stopping by my podcast, Finding God in Our Pain. Welcome. Hi, I'm your host, Sherry Pilkington. In this podcast, you'll hear firsthand stories of how the God of the Holy Bible meets real people in their real pain. We look at the good God we profess through the lens of pain and suffering. I'm processing the most painful season of my life after unexpectedly losing Larry, my husband of 32 years. In my journey, I've discovered that there are many types of deaths. Maybe you've asked God, how could you let this happen? Why me? Where are you, God? Do you even care? What am I supposed to do with my life now? Here at Finding God in Our Pain, we don't shy away from the tough questions. I ask them to my guests. I share what I've experienced. We give real examples of how God shows up in the darkest, most painful situations in life. May the stories that you hear and the advice you receive encourage you to engage the heart of God about your painful places or memories or experiences or even your unmet expectations. Lean in close to God's heart because He speaks beautiful things in the dark. My guest today is a longtime Bible teacher, a certified speaker. She currently serves as a connection pastor at her church and will be able to call her author as soon as her book is completed and published. Additionally, she leads a healing ministry called Freedom. My guest is Mary Beth Powers, and we connected over the topic that we're discussing today, unhealthy soul ties. We talked about their impact on relationships and personal growth and the importance of recognizing and breaking these ties through self-evaluation, godly instruction, leaning into the heart of God, and professional counseling with regard to trauma associated with some soul ties. Mary Beth defined a soul tie, and while it is not a biblical term, she connected the dots for us in how the Bible refers to uniting, joining, cleaving to someone as the definition of a soul tie. I had a lot of curiosity about soul ties because it's not something often spoken about in church, and yet when they go undetected, they rob us personally in countless ways, and some of which are delaying our ability to fulfill the calling on our life, becoming a victim because of a lack of identity, and then you repeat cycles, staying stuck in trauma, which cripples us mentally, emotionally, physically. And these are some of the possible results of staying attached to unhealthy soul ties. I asked some very pointed questions about pornography soul ties, how soul ties created in past sexual relationships impact current ones. We talked about abusive relationship soul ties. I even asked Mary Beth about unwanted soul ties that are forced upon us, such as rape, and she even included incest in that portion of the discussion. In short, it was a very interesting topic, and you may hear Mary Beth back on my show again because the book that she is in the process of writing is on generational curses, and that is something else that I am very interested in. Let's jump in and educate ourselves on soul ties. Let's see if they apply to our life, and if so, let's break them off and walk in countless new levels of freedom. Mary Beth, welcome to the show today.
Hey, Sherry. Glad to be here.
This is going to be a very interesting conversation because we're going to shed some light on the topic of soul ties, something that I don't hear the church talking about, or at least not with any frequency. And the times that I have heard it spoken about and addressed, it's in the context of healing ministries. So I think unless you're partaking in the various types of healing ministries, maybe you won't hear much about it. And after you find out the purpose and the power behind breaking these soul ties, the unhealthy ones, that is, you wonder why the church isn't talking about it more. And for me, I heard about soul ties when participating with the Healing Ministry Cleansing Stream about 6 years ago. I've heard of Living Waters. And Mary Beth, you lead healing workshops, correct? What is the name of yours?
Yes, the one I lead is called Freedom. And we break down what the soul is in the body, of course, and what it means. And you're right. We don't talk a lot about it in church. Most of the time when it's talked about it, it isn't in a healing ministry, mainly because it's connected to a lot of unhealthy soul ties. And we need that release from that. But there are good, healthy ties as well. And we're going to talk about those today, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with defining the soul. Is there a difference?
Absolutely. The soul, you know, of course, is made up of the mind, will, and the emotions, and that's the flesh part of us. And then we have the spirit, which indwells with us, that we're God's temple, and he indwells inside of us. That is our number one connection. I like to break the word down because soul tie, as you know, is not a biblical term. However, soul is, and tie is actually, tie is more in a form of binds or attaches, fastens, clings, bonded, you know, connected. Those are all the terms that the Bible uses. And so when you put them together, oftentimes a soul tie is just an attachment with our mind and our emotions to another person, another soul, a relationship. And how we pursue that relationship is whether it can become unhealthy or healthy.
Are there any red flags? Like at what point? Because I think a lot of stuff starts off healthy, not just soul ties, not just relationships, but I think a lot of things in life start off healthy and then they turn and they become something unhealthy. How can someone have an indication that, okay, wait a minute, this soul tie is a little serious. Maybe I need to step back. Maybe I need to evaluate it.
Oftentimes with a soul tie, an unhealthy soul tie, you'll start to see behavior issues, because you can have different ties, but like an emotional tie, a soul tie, an unhealthy one could be where it can be between the same sex, it can be between opposite sex, it can be between family members, and basically it's just a heavy dependence on someone else in an unhealthy way is the best way I can explain it. But the symptoms that you will come across is you'll have this extreme need of approval and recognition. You'll have a great desire to control the other person. You'll have problems with intimacy and boundaries. You don't know where your boundaries are because you think that because you're in control, your boundaries are your boundaries, not theirs. You begin to lie, a lot of dishonesty. You'll do anything. People pleasing is another one. Just all kinds of things. And then you can even in the unhealthy form, you can go into violence. You know, you can go as an extreme if you're in an abusive relationship. And so, you know, those are kind of symptoms that to start with. And you'll know because they'll begin to pull you away from your relationship with Christ as well.
An unhealthy one interrupts a healthy lifestyle or healthy relationships, maybe with your spouse or with your family, with, I don't know, your church. And like you're saying, with God, certainly anything that comes between you and God is unhealthy.
Right.
Takes that away.
Right.
You shared your experience because I think friendship is like the basic one. And then yet it ended up being turned into something that was unhealthy. Can you share that with the audience?
Yeah, it was a great friendship. She was my ride or die. We had a lot of fun. We did a lot of things together. And she's still a great friend. It's just, I at times didn't feel like I could do things without her. I needed her approval, even over my husband's or even over God's. And that's where it became unhealthy. And also God was growing me in a way that I don't feel like that relationship was going. It kind of in an opposite direction. She was a godly friend. And I blame myself more than anything because I was a people pleaser. It was a perfect storm. You know, you have control issues and one tries to control the other. And then you get wrapped up and you think, oh, I'm not going to survive without this friendship. And I started to notice that. And honestly, until I walked away from the relationship, I had no idea the kind of damage I went through in a tremendous amount of grief. And that's another thing. Grief, a lot of times when you're trying to break a soul tie, a lot of times people will think it's just, oh, you just cut the cords and you walk away. But there's a grieving process in there, and you need to allow yourself that time to really, I didn't do that. I just immediately just thought something was wrong with me. And technically, there were some things wrong. I needed to learn my identity and who I was in Christ. He was my ultimate soul tie. I like to tell the girls in my Bible study class oftentimes, too, that, you know, what you feed the most is the strongest in your relationships. So if I feed my spirit, I spend time with the Lord, I sit down with Him, I study, I'm going to feed my spirit stronger. It's going to be stronger. But then I allow my emotions, feelings, and emotions should never lead. And oftentimes they get in the way in an unhealthy soul tie. We tend to let them follow first. Levi Lesko says it best. He says, actions first, feelings follow. You know, actions, you know to take your steps, to step away, and it's not going to feel good, but the feelings will come as you make the right obedient steps.
I was going to ask you, did you think it had something to do with an identity issue, or was it just that we're a people of five senses, those emotions included, and that we, you know, tend to gravitate to that? But it sounds like if you strengthen your relationship with Christ, intimacy with Christ, and grow that identity, maybe you can spot them sooner.
Well, that's a very good important point, because if you don't know who you are in Christ, there's a lot of things that will throw itself out of whack in all your relationships. You'll need that approval from people other than God, because you don't know who you are. You'll want to act and think in certain ways to be more like them, or to gain their approval, when actually the only approval you need is from God. And so, yes, it can definitely identity. And I was in an identity crisis. It was a time in my life that God was making a lot of changes. I had left my church of over 20 years. I was the women's ministry leader for a long time. So I'd lost my title. I'd lost friendships. Not that I'd lost the friendships, but I was disconnected from them. I had a new church. I was turning 50. Lord have mercy. And then my kids were leaving home. It was empty nest time. I mean, I was a mess. I was a complete mess. And so it's the perfect storm for God to rebuild me and renew my spirit and give me and teach me who I was. I had a moment of just falling apart one Sunday morning. I'd thrown myself on the altar. We've been at this new church not very long, and I thought, these people are going to think I'm an absolute mess. And I was, but I felt so comfortable and so safe. And I will never forget the sweetest little lady coming up to me, and she says, "Do you know who you are?" And I just froze. I mean, I bucked up to her, but let me tell you, this woman is a powerhouse. She's 85 years old, and she is everybody needs a Miss Esther in her life. And her name was Miss Esther, and she was the sweetest little thing. And she was the face I saw every Sunday. And she would say, "Who are you?" And I as I thought I could buck up to her, no, she's not the type to buck up to. But in my mind, I was thinking, yeah, I do. I'm my children's mom. I'm my husband's wife. And she's like, "No, that's not what I'm asking you. Do you know whose you are?" And I left that day a wreck, but it was a good wreck, because God began to unpeel the layers and teach me who I was in the process. It was a long process, because I'm stubborn and I don't listen to anything. But as I grew and he was rebuilding me, I always like to use this term. One is recognize, release, and restore. Recognize that what is going on. You know, you may not all know have the answers, but God does. And so sit before Him. Recognize what it is that's wrong. What is it that's pulling you away from Him? Ask Him to show you, because He sure will. And then it'll become the layer part. And then release it to Him, because He wants to rebuild it and restore you back to what He planned for and the purpose that He created you for. So that's kind of the process that He took me through in that relationship.
And does God, have you found God to restore things to back to how they used to be?
Oh, no. No, and I wouldn't want it to be because I was a mess and I had no idea what kind of mess I was until I stepped away. And people would make comments to me like, you know, what was going on with you? You know, because I'm a people person. So I love to be around people. I'm an extrovert, not an introvert. Although the older I get, I think I'm about split down the middle now. But in order for me to step into my purpose that God had for me, I had to know who I was first. I couldn't walk in with that false identity. And that's a lot of times those relationships, those unhealthy ones, that's where they'll lead you. You know, they'll lead you because you're constantly trying to, again, approve, people please. And I will never forget driving down the road and the Lord telling me, this is the first time I ever heard people pleasing. This was several years ago, but I was driving down the road and out of nowhere, I heard God say, you need to stop people pleasing. And I thought, what? What is that? And then the more I thought and the more he unleashed things, I thought, I definitely am a people pleaser.
So that's a good point you made a minute ago about when you're in this a situation where it's become a crisis in your life, where there's change, like you were catching wave after wave after wave of change. And those are all serious things to be changing in your life. And so anytime our life is interrupted, and I don't think it matters the degree, because people take what I might consider small, but it's huge to them. So in those seasons of change, I think that's a great time to check in with the Lord on your identity, just to make sure your feet are solid.
Yeah. A counselor told me years ago, I can remember, I think it was one of my postpartum after having a baby, and I didn't understand what depression was or postpartum depression was. And my baby, you know, I brought her home and she was 6 months old before any of it started. And I can remember sitting there thinking, she slept through the night. She ate good. She was on a great schedule. She was the perfect little baby. And I thought, why am I depressed? Everything's going great. And I mean, not perfect, because you know what it's like being a new mom. It can be a nightmare too. But I can remember my counselor saying, you know, change is change. Your body doesn't know the difference. And so it can be good or it can be bad, but it can mess with your chemicals. It can mess with, you know, how you get better or whatever it is that you need to take those steps to get better. Sometimes it's medication. Sometimes it's counseling. But mostly it is sitting with the Lord and seeking Him, because He has all the answers.
He does. And He gives direction. You know, you ask Him, Lord, if I need medication, who do you want me to see? And He'll connect you up somehow, some way.
Yes.
With who He wants you to see. So He answers all those questions as well. I think, I'm not sure if it's that I've, as I get older, or whether, you know, my life has slowed down, I have more time. I'm not sure what the difference is, but I really understand the value of continually considering and being open to my life changing and shifting. And I have to reevaluate. I have to look to see what works is what's not working. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger, I just thought, no, this is the way it is. And stuff gets thrown at you and you're just trying to fold it into the day or fold it into your, you know, process, but you get overwhelmed and then you're depressed and you're starting mm-hmm. to create survival skills, when in fact you just need to take a look at things and see, what do I keep? What do I get rid of? What do I change about where I'm at in life right now? So I'm catching on kind of late in the game.
My husband has a great saying, and he says, my yesterdays are more than my tomorrows. And so he wants to make the most of his tomorrows. And he's going to be 60 this year. I know he would love for me to tell that. But he is such a wise soul when it comes to that kind of stuff. I think we get to that point where we focus in what is important. You know, we spend our lives, our first half of our lives, trying to figure out what we're supposed to do. And then we really kind of sometimes never really figure that out. What am I going to be when I grow up? I still don't know. But then we get to that point where we're like, okay, I got to get serious about this. What am I going to do? That's when you stop, because God always tells us that we are to think heavenly bound. And so what is the impact that we're going to be making from this point on that's going to matter in eternity? And that's where a lot of my ministry comes from. And so I love to talk about generations, because my testimony is about generational change. And I broke that generational tie And so my family didn't go to church. We didn't, you know, they're great, great people, just never went to church. And so when I started to have children, that was a turnaround for me. You know, I knew it was important to raise them in Jesus. I didn't even know Jesus at the time, but I had godly grandparents that poured into me. I knew who he was. I knew I wanted to know more. And that's just where it started for me many years ago in my early 20s.
You say generational ties, it makes me think of generational curses, but I won't get off topic here, but I would even love to have a conversation about that as well. What we've been talking about is pointing to the ways that we kind of set ourselves up for unhealthy ties, soul ties. And so I think that's very important to understand kind of how we become the perfect storm, especially if that soul tie has turned into something that is unhealthy. Initially it wasn't, now it is. You and I had talked about mental, emotional, and physical ties. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the mental one first, because here's what I've experienced. And I thought it very interesting because I didn't pick up on the fact, then I still don't know if it's a soul tie, but nonetheless, I was like, I wonder if this is a soul tie. On Facebook, social media, somebody's talking to me and they keep saying things to me that if I took them seriously, it could really lead to other places. It's a no-go for me. That person's already in a relationship, so I'm not going to even pursue that. But nonetheless, I saw a statistic that said that 35% of divorces are contributed to social media. And if you think about social media, is just a, it's not even physical. It's just where you're having conversations with people. How is it that you can have a soul tie created in that manner? And I guess, though, if I, again, like I said, if I were to take this person seriously about what they were saying, rather than just seeing them as flirtatious, because nobody takes a flirtatious person seriously. But if I were one to do that, it could go down the wrong road.
Oh, most definitely. I think that's the way a lot of extramarital affairs start. The mental part. Now, we know, I think everybody knows, and I'm not a licensed counselor, but I think we all know everything starts in the mind. You know, that one thought and where it goes and what direction it goes in is what matters. And it's not necessarily the thought that comes in your mind. It's the sin. It's the action behind what the thought is. Even if it has nothing to do with soul ties, you know, if we start to believe something about ourselves that's not true, that God said was true, you know, and we go down that rabbit hole, you know, how it can lead to depression. But also in relationships, I think a lot of times it starts with fantasizing sometimes, or strong infatuations. Let's just take an example. You're working in the workforce and, you know, you're having issues at home in your marriage. And then Mr. Casanova swings in and he's paying a lot of attention to you. He's saying things that you really want to hear from your husband. That's the perfect storm. And it starts to brew. And sometimes with the mental soul ties, there's no physical activity. It just becomes so strong in infatuation that it pulls you away. You know, it's unhealthy when you're having unhealthy thoughts about someone else besides your spouse. What comes to mind with me, social media is celebrity. You know, that's an easy one to get locked into. I don't know if you watch Netflix much, but you can get on there and really have a heyday with some of that in your mind. But especially with sex. Sex is in everything now. It's like it's attached to everything. And most people will relate an unhealthy soul tie to a sexual relationship. You talked about earlier about not talking about in church. I think the family dynamics have gotten so misconstrued now that we don't even know how to talk about it. I think we want to talk about things like that. Sex is a very beautiful, healthy thing when it's designed the way God intended it to. And that's not a narrow-minded, selfish way to think. It's a protection that he gave us. I love the way that Michael Todd puts it, because it's so good. He says, you cannot protect the heart with a condom. He says, you can protect yourself sexually from diseases, but your heart, you cannot. And God designs for us to to protect our heart. But when we come in those unhealthy sexual relationships, our hearts get involved. So we become tied to that person emotionally, and then it becomes unhealthy because it's not in God's design.
So it can start out mental and then move to emotional and then physical. Is that like a normal pattern for a soul tie?
Yeah, I would believe so. I believe, you know, of course it has the thought that start with the mind, you know, the desire. It becomes a strong desire, and then you act on the strong desire, and then your emotions get involved, and then you let all that lead. And when you remember, we talked about that earlier, when you let that lead, that can be very unhealthy, especially when it's going in the wrong direction.
Speaking of unhealthy ties, something that is very uncomfortable for me is that a soul tie can be forced on you. And to me, it drives home God's sacredness for sex, and that it's a responsibility to be taken very seriously, meaning how we use sex. Like you're talking about, how do we connect with it? And what do we honor it? Do we do it within God's boundaries because it is for our protection? So talk to me a little bit about this soul tie that's created, say, in rape.
Yeah. Before I enter into this conversation, a soul tie can be one-sided, especially when you have like an infatuation with someone. And that actually happened in the Bible. And the best way that I know is to read that verse to you so I can explain it a little bit better. It said, one day Dinah, the daughter of Jacob and Leah, went to visit some of the young men who lived in the area. But when the local prince, I think his name is Shechem, son of Hamor and the Hivite, saw Dinah, he seized her and he raped her. But then he fell in love with her and he tried to win her affection with tender words. So anytime there's sex involved, of course, it becomes a tie. Now, Dinah, I'm sure, did not expect that or want that in any kind of way. However, I think that what happens is that infatuation gets that one-sided, and then it becomes violent, a control issue. You know, you have controls, you have incest and sex outside of a marriage, sexual immorality in a nutshell. It's an unhealthy urge to take what does not belong to you. And even in an affair, an extramarital affair, because it gets physical. That's it. So it's not necessarily that it's the person's fault. However you think about this, if you enter into, let's just say that you are in a rape situation and you enter into a marriage, you're going to have that baggage, that damage that's been done to your spirit. And when you decide to connect with someone else, there's going to be most likely issues. And that's when counseling comes involved, asking the Lord to take it from you, you asking for healing. And he does, it's just all intertwined with evil. It's the evil side of the unhealthy tie. And also too, there's like, for instance, a nonviolent, but more of a one-sided would be, of course, sex outside of marriage, but there's another verse that I'd like to read, and it says, but you can't say that our bodies are made for sexual immorality. They were made for the Lord, and the Lord cares about our bodies. The God will raise us up from the dead by his power, just as he raised our Lord from the dead. Don't you realize that your bodies are actually parts of Christ? Should a man take his body, which is the part of Christ, and join it with a prostitute? Never. Now, during this time, you know, this is in 1 Corinthians, and the Corinthian people were very corrupt, and prostitution was actually really heavy during that time frame. And so that's why he's referring to prostitution. But he's just saying connecting your body with someone, period, is not healthy when it's done outside of God's boundaries.
And so a soul tie, I'm trying to dig down a little bit deeper. So a soul tie causes trauma, or can cause trauma. Mm-hmm. And then there's the breaking down of your identity, because now you have to deal with trauma, whether you realize it or not. Because I immediately think of when Eve bit the apple, you know, Satan had told her, the serpent had told her that she would die, but she bit mm-hmm. the apple, and she's like, I didn't die. I didn't die. But yes, she had introduced death and she would die. But because she did not get the immediate result, she felt that it was powerless. Satan's threat was powerless. And yet we're told not to have sex outside of marriage. But yet we have sex outside of marriage and we don't feel like we've done anything wrong because might not be any major consequences. I can think of a lot of major consequences when you have sex outside of marriage. But we're thinking, oh, well, it's okay. I didn't die. And yet we're still taking on the things that God said was going to happen to our soul, to our identity. And so I think that's pretty tragic in that we miss that.
It's an abomination against the body. That's what he tells us in his word. It's sin against really him, and because he is the temple. Mm-hmm. And so we are to be set apart from that, to be different. And let me tell you, there's blessings in that. A lot of people just automatically think, oh, you're trying to control me and tell me what to do and not to do. That is, the world sees it that way. But that's not true. But God is for you, and he has so many blessings that he wants to give out, to hand out, but he to protect us. He loves us so much. And anytime, and here's a good example too. If I have an electric fence around my house and I put that collar on my dog, well, if I just let her run wild, she's going to get hit by a car. And she would, because she's an Australian Shepherd and she's wild. But if I put that collar back on her and she does get shocked, she realizes. Now, do I want her to get shocked? Absolutely not. It breaks my heart every time. And it's happened very few times because she's learned she's safe within those boundaries. And it's the same with us. God designs those boundaries for, and that's what he did in the garden. You know, those were boundaries. And he was saying, don't eat from that tree because I don't want your eyes to be open to the knowledge that you're not supposed to have. You know, I've made this perfect garden for you. And now your desires caused you to go into sin and to go and to grab something you thought you couldn't live without. It's the same with that relationship that's, you know, unhealthy or inappropriate.
I can relate to that so much because Eve wanted to know what God knew, but did not realize that she did not have the power, the authority, the input, the influence in order to handle what she just took on. And I can relate to that, thinking that I want certain things or in times past where I feel like God's keeping something from me that's good. And yet he was protecting me because like Eve, she was in over her head, and we still live with that generational curse because of what she did. Exactly. But the good news is Jesus's blood breaks that curse. So that's always good news. So let's transition into talking about breaking soul ties.
Yes. My favorite part, because he is so good. First of all, we talked about a little bit earlier, recognize it, get honest with yourself and with God, and then examine your heart. Ask God to show you where the ungodly tie has entered. And listen to this too. This has something to do with it. Oftentimes we have this root deep within us that we're always trying to fill. You've probably heard that before, that we're all born with a hole in our heart. We're always trying to fill that hole. And so it's the same with this. We're just doing it with relationships. We feel like we got to have that relationship to be satisfied. But God is the only one that can completely satisfy us. And so when we find that relationship first, everything else falls into place. Now, does everything look perfect here on this earth? Absolutely not. We still have to strive every day to spend our time with him and renew our relationship with him. But if you find that root of that wound, that you're trying to fulfill, and God will reveal it. He will. If you sit with him, he will reveal it. Then you'll know. Like for me, I had a rejection wound. I spent my life feeling as if I was rejected, that led to people pleasing and even lying, you know, because when you want people to love you and like you. And so you'll do whatever it takes to do that. And I also entered into a lot of relationships I should not have because I was trying to fulfill that void. So once you recognize it first and then repent of it, turn it. You know, we talk about repentance and forgiveness. Tell God you're sorry and then just plan, make a plan, find an accountability partner, someone that you can trust, even if it is a counselor, to sit down with and say, okay, I need help. Admit you need that help. Because if you don't, you'll just stay stuck there. And God says in John 8:32, he says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. So confessing it to God and saying, okay, God, I have a problem with this. He already knows, you know, just give it to him, release it to him, and let him, take it from you, but also to free yourself from that and then forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't sit there in that. You know, we talk about forgiveness and repentance and all that, but we forget about ourselves. And oftentimes we're our worst enemy. So when we step outside those boundaries, we're left with shame and guilt and all the other things, the baggage that comes with it. That's what we don't realize. That's what Eve did not realize, yeah, is all the things that came with that strong desire. Know who you are. Spend your time knowing who your real identity is. Then God will begin to fill you with who you are, and you won't have as strong a desire to find it elsewhere. You'll know whose you are. There's a verse that freed me years ago, and it was in Isaiah 43:25, and says, yes, I alone will blot out your sins for my own sake and never think of them again. And, you know, as we try to carry all that baggage within us and not forgive ourselves, we form our own identity. And so God says that he forgets all that. And so he also says, even before we were made, God loved us and chose us to be holy and without fault in his eyes. And so you don't have to stay where you were in that sin, or wherever it is, the unhealthy part of that, even if it is in rape. I don't consider that being someone's fault, but however, it can destroy you from the inside out. And let God have that. Let God restore that back. Because it's a beautiful thing. He wants to do that. Give yourself time to heal. You know, when you let go of a soul tie that you're not supposed to have, you'll have grief. You'll have a time where it's just hard. It's going to hurt. And so oftentimes we think it's just like snipping a rope. Okay, it's done. It's over. Move on. No, it can carry on for years and years and years. And so let yourself be patient with yourself and allow yourself to heal in that area. And then let it go. Just let it go. Release it to God and let him heal those dark places. And I always say, live with your hands wide open, because you never know. Don't hold so tightly to something that it's going to keep you bound and keep you from God, because he is the one that wants to take it and heal it and restore it.
And he does some beautiful work, that's for sure.
Oh, he does.
When the part that you're talking about, you know, getting real with yourself and examining yourself, that's going to take some deep conversation with God, because I think, or at least from my personal experience, the symptoms that we exhibit, if you will, the self-protection things that we put in place that cause us problems because we're relying on our own strength rather than God's strength. But when God sees those things, he wants what's behind it. And sometimes I didn't even know what was behind it. And I had to spend time mm-hmm. with God digging around into, why would I do this? Why would I say that? Why am I acting like this? I know that this is not right. And so he's not offended by the symptom, if you will, because he wants us to give him what's behind that. What is making you act that way? What is causing this reaction? And so I think that in that reflection, in the examining and the repenting, it's just a beautiful process of God peeling away layers to get to what the real problem is. And when he does inject his truth into that place, man.
Yeah, it's freedom, such a beauty. Sweet, sweet spot. As my friend says, it's always anything up from God is sweet. But in each one of those is a process. You can't put a time cap on it, because I think I stayed in that recognize for a really long time. And actually, I think I would probably say I stayed in every stage for a really long time. And I learned also too something that God just really recently, I didn't learn it new, but he brought it to new light. And that's the word obedience. I always attached it to something very negative. And so I thought, okay, it's a bad thing. That means I've been a bad person and I'm not being obedient. I've always tied it to that. But God recently released me from that and said, no, obedience is a good thing because behind it is so many blessings. So what does obedience look like? You know, it's taking that step towards God to let Him do what He has to do to heal you and make you whole again. Because without that, you won't step into your purpose. You'll stay bound. You'll stay heavy. You'll stay full of hopelessness and all the things. But it is a process. You're right. And it just takes time. And you have to give yourself that time to do that and walk through it. And in His timing is when He decides you've healed.
Takes courage to step out into that and expose yourself. But you're not exposing yourself just to anyone. You're exposing yourself to your Creator, your Father.
Right. So I
think there's some safety, or at least, you know, have confidence that there's some safety in that. He'll protect you as you reveal the innermost dark parts of who you are. And like you said, it's not that He doesn't know it, but He wants you to engage Him, like give Him permission to step into that place and begin to speak into that place. And it goes back to your point of identity too, because when we fill ourselves with who God is, that tells us who we are, but we show up in the different roles and the different responsibilities that we have with an overflow. We don't show up needing things from people. We don't need somebody to tell us we're pretty or we're this or we're that, because we already have an overflow from our Father. And so we're here to give to you. We're here to serve you because of the way God has made me stable and put me on the rock.
Right. That's the healthy side of a relationship with Christ, in that relationship that you have so that you can spill onto others. That's our whole point, you know, to be in here.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you get it perfect every time. I mean, because I hope nobody blames God for the way I have represented Him at times. I hope they blame me.
Thank goodness that He is good at cleaning up messes, because.
Amen.
I think He goes behind me with a mop.
With a mop. A spiritual mop. No. Okay. Let's see. When we're talking about getting healing, because like you said, there is a grieving process to breaking certain ties, especially the ones that are sexual in nature. So with regard to the trauma that's attached to those things, can one seek the help found in one of the healing ministries?
I think so, to a degree. I think when you're dealing with trauma, I know in my ministry, the Freedom Ministry is probably better on more towards the healing side. I would think for trauma, abuse, rape, those kinds of things, I definitely think counseling would be your first stop, because they're licensed and they know what triggers what, how to walk through that. I personally actually know someone who's close to me walking through this. She was in an abusive relationship and has entered into marriage and didn't realize she had brought so much into that. And when she did, she sat with her counselor. I mean, she's tried years to do it on her own. And she's actually been through the Freedom Group, which really she loved, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to deal with that trauma first. Let's learn what to do with it first, and then stepping into the healing process on the healings. I have experienced some women in my class. I teach women only, but I have seen them come in with some trauma from their past, and mostly it's with parenting kind of things. We've had some sexual abuse, but they were years gone. You know, that was when they were small. A lot of years have packed in between there. And you'll know in those moments when it's time to point them to someone with a little more power in that field. Because I think the Freedom Ministry for us is just recognizing a lot of our day-to-day stuff. How to live. Ours is centered around living in the tree of life. There are two trees in the garden, and you can swing from either tree, but God prefers you to stay in the tree of life. And so that's what our whole ministry is about, how to learn to live in that tree of life.
I have heard it said many times, God is enough. And I do not doubt that one bit. God does supernatural, miraculous things on the spot, transforming people, drug addicts who will never be interested in a drug again. So I cannot downplay that or disagree with that. But God deals with me in a very practical way. So I don't think I've ever had to have medication because mine typically was circumstantial or environmental. But I have been to therapy, different kinds of therapy. I've done deliverance ministries. And each time I find a new level, a new area of freedom and truth. So if it's medication, if it's therapy, professional therapy, if it's God delivering you immediately, I just think that you should seek out the help that's available and possible. I wouldn't say that, you know, someone who's been subjected to incest or rape or traumas like that or trauma period, that it's your fault, but you can take responsibility for your healing and right. for the purpose of moving you out of that victim position. And so there's a lot of power in that as well, as far as transitioning out of victim to victor.
Absolutely. And I think God speaks through all those ministries. He uses each other. You know, that's why he gives us gifts, is to pour into other people. And he uses other people. I think he uses medication. I've had to use medication. I've had to use counseling. I've had probably had it all. But I think that when he enters in the situation, he'll guide your steps. I think seeking him first is probably the most prominent thing, because he's going to put you on that path to those people. I like to call it, in my book I'm writing, I call it the thread of love. And so God will put people in your life to guide you in the right path. And you won't even know what you're doing. You won't even know that you're on the right path. Or sometimes you won't even know you're on the wrong path. But the beautiful thing about God is that he does. He lights that path right in front of you, just enough for you to take the next step. And he doesn't give it all to you at one time, because we couldn't handle it if he gave it. I mean, yes, healing can take place instantly. He's God. He can do anything he wants to. But you will see most of the time, you know, like with addiction and things that are a lot harder, things like rape and things like that. But it's a process. It's all a process, because I don't think personally we could handle it all at one time. I know I couldn't have. The layers are what helped me to take each step each time. And it wasn't so overwhelming at the time too.
And every time God wanted to take me back to my childhood, and I know everybody has a dysfunctional childhood, because I think the definition of a perfect family is where everybody's needs are met every single time, consistently, without flaw. And I don't think that's really possible for humans. So I feel like there's dysfunction in every family. But when God wanted to take me back to places like that, he's like, and I would tell him, I don't want to go back. Why am I going to go back to that? Relive all of that. I'm old enough to know you don't get people like you want them, blah, blah, blah. And the Lord spoke into my spirit one time and he said, Sherry, I don't take you back to hurt you. I take you back to heal you. And so from then on, I'm like, okay, Lord, whenever he wants to take me back, I'm like, okay, but he has done that healing in layers. That's been my experience, is layers. And I am grateful for those layers, because I think it would have laid me flat in some of those areas where, and plus it kept me coming back to him to taste his beauty, to see his goodness, to understand that he speaks beautiful things in the dark. And that's been very powerful for my maturing process in him.
He speaks a lot in the darkness. And sometimes I think it takes us getting there to hear from him. Lisa Turkhurst talks about this a lot of times. She says, when you're on the mountaintops, everything's great. But if you notice, the water will fall down off the mountaintops. And in the valley is where all the green grass is, because that's where all the growth is. Mm-hmm. And so when you step into the valley, the darker places in between the mountains, oftentimes that's where you grow the most and become the strongest and the most resilient. And I think that's one of the things that God wants to take us on that journey. And he has no darkness. You know, he's full of light. And so he wants to be the light in the darkness.
To your point, I've heard the most beautiful things when I am the quietest, when I don't have anything left to say, when I'm just laid flat on the floor, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and I just don't have anything left to say. And he speaks. And that's when I hear him, is when it's, I am the most quietest. When you break the soul tie, what happens immediately, like spiritual realm versus practical changes? And then what takes a little longer? I think we're kind of talking about like some of it, but can we put this together right here?
Well, I think there's a whole slew of things depending on who you are and your personality. I imagine for some people, there's a great relief. I know that the person that I was close to that was in an abusive relationship, she hurt drastically, but she felt this complete peace and freedom because she knew she was stepping in the right direction, but she still hurt. I mean, it still took a long time for her to overcome that pain. And even till today, there's still some pain in that. So I think it just depends on where you are in that process too. If it's years and years and years of abuse, you're going to be relieved, relieved when you finally are able to be free and step away from that. But still, there's always going to be a healing process with everybody. I think everybody across the board has to have on an unhealthy side of the soul tie.
So maybe the release and the relief has something to do with finally saying, okay, this is where my problem is emitting from. I have an unhealthy tie to this person or this thing. And then stepping into that and breaking it off, that process is painful, but that it is
a peace. I mean, you know, even when you're stepping into the right direction and you know it's the right direction, you're being obedient, the peace comes. That still doesn't mean you're not going to have pain in the process, but you're going to know. And eventually over time, God's going to heal those places and it's going to come a little easier and a little easier. And then you're going to learn how to take every step with Him, you know, and sometimes we step off the path, sometimes we get back on the path, sometimes we run ahead of Him, but He's always there lighting that path for us to step on and always stays by our side through it all. And, you know, He says, I'm near to the brokenhearted too. So in those places that are really hard, He's going to be there. He's there always, but He's definitely going to be there with the brokenhearted.
Just proof the fact that we have a relationship with a living God, a living, breathing yes. God, because it is a renewal every day. It is choosing Him to engage His heart and to discover Him and who He wants to be for us in the changing seasons of our life. I'm kind of backing up a little bit, but I'm curious about this, so I'm going to ask. Since soul ties help to create intimacy in marriage, do soul ties from previous relationships affect a marriage in a negative way?
Yes, most definitely. You know, first of all, a soul tie is not always easily broken. And you can bring strongholds into your marriage, especially when you don't realize that you have them. We capture, and I said this earlier, we kind of capture this mindset. It's this big giant rope and we just take a pair of scissors and we release it. But, and one snip and it's gone. But sometimes it's a grieving process of releasing it to God first. And then you have to understand what the logistics of the relationship was. Sex involved, because there's a stronger bond with sex, because that's a scientific thing too. And where was the strong infatuation? Was it one-sided? Was it two-sided? You take all the things. What was your strong draw to the person that you left behind, the stronghold that you now have entered into another relationship? If there was abuse in the relationship, you're bringing in that trauma into the relationship. A manipulative partner, you're going to see in the new relationship, you're going to see a lot of the characteristics. You're going to compare and sometimes in those situations. So often when you compare, you destroy some of the intimacy. That's another reason why you need to break the tie and let it go. Because if you're bringing it in, it's like bringing in all the garbage and the baggage that you carried in from the previous relationship. There's always going to be a comparison, even in the good things. And, you know, my ex-husband or my other relationship, he used to always take out the trash. What's wrong with you? You know, there's always going to be this comparison to an extent. Another one we haven't really touched on is pornography and how dangerous it is, because a lot of times what happens is your arousal has to come from the porn in order to be with someone or to be attracted to someone. You've tied it to that. I think that's a form of soul tie, I'll be honest with you, because you're relying on that to become your intimacy, your exotic or whatever it is the word I'm looking for. But basically you're bringing it into that marriage or that relationship. And then they can't satisfy you because that's what you need in order to do that. I definitely think it was what we bring in to lay it down. Get honest with your partner, you know, talk about things. When you're in a healthy relationship, one of the things that you really want to make sure is, does this person point you to Jesus? Does he care about, he or she care about the relationship with God? Are they for you? Are they encouraging you? Are they talking behind your back? There's all kinds of things that have to play. It has to be a safe place. Because if you come into a relationship where there's been abuse, you're automatically feeling unsafe. You haven't restored that safety. Not that the new person's causing you to feel unsafe. You just connect it with those emotions and fears, and you can bring it in as and make it feel like an unsafe place. And the partner feels like he's failed because, or she's failed because she isn't meeting that need. Again, going all the way back to your relationship with Christ and letting him heal those dark places in order to step into that new relationship.
Even then, the pornography changes the brain chemicals. And so now you're not really dealing with a genuine sexual desire. You're dealing with a change of the brain chemicals.
Thank God I labeled these. The Michael Todd quote. One of the things that he says, we talked about marriage, and he says that there's no condom for your heart. You might can protect your body from sexually transmitted diseases by wearing a condom, but you cannot protect your heart when you step outside the boundaries or cross the line. Mm-hmm. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. And that's in Proverbs 4:23. Mm-hmm. So he says that sex is not casual, that there's long-term benefits from it. You know, mm-hmm. the friends with benefits thing is not always what it's cracked up to be. Mm-mm. And so he explains a little about that. I love what he says here in his quote too. He says, he describes in his book, Relationship Goals, ungodly soul ties can cause delayed destiny, wasted time, emotional stress, trust issues, bitterness, insecurities, and more issues to a person's life.
Wow.
So, you know, it comes with a package. Whenever you take on that unhealthy soul tie. Scientifically, God created us to bond through sexual intimacy in marriage, and a soul tie was intended to create a long-lasting bond between husband and a wife for life. But also, too, during sex, a lot of times there is a hormone that's released in a male and a female. For the female, it's an oxytocin is released. It's a hormone that causes women to emotionally bond and glue to the man. Then researchers will say that oxytocin is produced naturally in the brain and that it is released when a couple becomes physically intimate. For women, it increases our trust and it immediately produces feelings of attachment. And then for men, when a soul tie is developed, and again, we're talking healthy because God designed this. They used to call it the moral revolution, but it's where chemicals are released in the man, and it's called vasopressin, and it's similar to oxytocin, except for it is primarily released in the man's brain. And so it can cause a man to bond to a woman during sex or intimate moments, and it's called the commitment hormone. So basically, it arouses their loyalty or their commitment or the desire to connect. And so men struggle with this as well. So I like to point that out because it's so beautiful how God even designed that. God designed for the healthy tie to come together through scientific ways too.
It's interesting to me how science is always proving God, and God is the reason behind science.
Right.
You can try to look at it through two different lenses, and yet you see the beauty of the full picture of what God's doing. All right, so we are running out of time. I hate it because this has been such a great conversation. Is there anything that I have not asked you about that you want to share before we leave?
Yes. I think one of the things that God brought to my attention was in the book of John, and he's interviewing Nicodemus. You know, Nicodemus comes to him at night, and if you'll notice, Nicodemus will ask him a question. Jesus, sitting before him, never answers the question. He answers what was in his heart. He knew that Nicodemus was seeking him, so he went straight to that. Said, unless you are born again, you will not see the kingdom of heaven. And then they get into a conversation about birth, because he's thinking physical birth. Jesus is talking about spiritual birth. But move on in a couple of chapters later, the woman at the well, you know, he goes out of his way during his travels, and he goes out of his way to a small town to where she is, and she's gathering her water at noon because she's become that unhealthy. She's a lot of unhealthy soul ties. She's been married 5 times and she's living with a man. And I think it's very interesting that he did the very same thing with her when he comes to her and he approaches her, and he just immediately skips over. They're having a conversation that, you know, why didn't you bring a bucket, and what water are you talking about? You know, the living water. And he says, then he tells her, go get your husband. And he doesn't do that to shame her. He does it to remind her that he sees her heart. He knows what she needs to be healed, just like Nicodemus, to bring him closer to them. God does not bring us before him to shame us and hurt us and walk us through these processes to leave us in our hurt and our pain. If he ever brings it up, if he ever points you to that pain point, that wound, or whatever it is that needs to be healed, it's for a reason. He has a purpose. Because look what happened after he did it with Nicodemus and the Samaritan and the woman in the adulterous affair. I mean, you just think of all the things. Thomas, when he healed Thomas's doubt, he had a purpose for them to go and share the gospel. And so she did. The Samaritan woman went into the town, and the woman at the well went into town and began to share the gospel. He knew what she was going to do. But in order for her to do that, what did he have to do first? Heal that dark place. And so I don't want if I want anybody to know anything, it's don't walk away thinking that it's too hard to heal from, because God designed you for a purpose and a plan. But first, he wants to heal those dark places so that he can send you out whole for him and to fulfill the purpose that he created you for.
Again, to me, that is the Lord going in for the deep dive. Like, we got all these symptoms and all these surface things that we're projecting, but yet he sees what that seed is that he wants to heal, that place that we've been hanging on to, a lie that was created maybe even in our childhood. So he's so gentle too when he does it. So
it's such a good thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, I concur with you. He is gentle. He is kind. And his heart is to heal you. Right. So, and then let me ask you this final question. Of all the stuff we've been talking about, the different types of soul ties, the way soul ties affect us, breaking soul ties, what is the one thing that you want our listeners to remember after they walk away from this conversation?
Always remember, when you're thinking about a soul tie, that you want to pursue those healthy relationships. And in order for you to have those healthy relationships, you have to allow God to fulfill that place, that desire that only he can feel, in order for you to have those good, healthy relationships. Does that mean those relationships are going to go sour at times? Probably so. There's no such thing as a perfect relationship, because we live in that imperfect world. But we serve a God that wants to have us to have a fulfilling life. He wants us to prosper. He wants to give us blessings. He wants to show his love. And he created us for love. So he created us for healthy relationships. And we should always seek them out and never be afraid to leave the unhealthy behind and step into the healthy. Find yourself an accountability partner. Get before God and let Him expose the lies so that you can live and walk in truth and have that good relationship that He designed for you.
When we say no to the things that are not of God or not God's best for us, we make room for a better yes, more truth, more beauty, more honesty, more love.
Absolutely.
Mary Beth, this has been a wonderful conversation. I cannot wait to share it with my listeners. And so thank you very, very much. I appreciate you.
I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Thank you for your time and for sharing this experience with my guest. I hope you have found encouragement for today and a deeper revelation of God's heart in the midst of pain and suffering. We'd love to have you as a subscriber to Finding God in Our Pain so that you can be connected with all my guests as they share their personal experiences and professional knowledge about pain and suffering. And because this podcast is a division of the website A Life of Thrive, for more information and the various ways you can connect with us, please visit the website alifeofthrive.com. I look forward to sharing more transparent stories from the hearts of women who intimately know what it means to have their world flipped upside down, their authentic struggle to make sense of it, and what recovery and healing looks like. Till then, sweet woman, remember you are not alone and that God speaks the most beautiful things in the dark.